ACT Radio is taped and produced at the KTEP studios at the University of Texas at El Paso. The views and opinions expressed on ACT Radio are solely those of its participants and do not necessarily reflect those of KTEP, its staff, or management.
Welcome to ACT Radio, Animal Concerns of Texas. I'm Greg Lawson.
I'm Tom Linney.
And I'm Liz Walsh.
Here on ACT, we discuss how we humans relate to other animals.
We talk about how we use them for food, clothing, and entertainment, and how there are humane alternatives to these practices.
And we also discuss why a plant-based diet is the healthiest for humans and also the best thing one can do for the environment.
So if you're concerned about the environment, if you're concerned about the way animals are treated, if you're concerned about your health, stay with us for Animal Concerns of Texas.
Coming up on today's show, we feature a conversation with Jasmine Singer and Marianne Sullivan of Our Hen House. Our Hen House produces resources that you can use to find your own way to create change for animals. That's a little later in the show, but first some news.
Reuters reports that Yellowstone National Park plans to reduce its bison population this winter by as many as 900 head, or one-fifth of the herd, by killing off those animals that stray from the park in what would be the largest cull in the last 7 years. The plan was unveiled a day after conservationists filed a legal petition demanding the Obama administration end annual culling exercises that have resulted in thousands of Yellowstone bison being shipped off to Native American tribes for slaughter during the past decade. In recent years, wayward bison have been removed through a combination of special roundups and hunting. The latest quota would cut the size of the country's last purebred band of free-ranging bison to 4,000 animals from an estimated current population of 4,900. Millions of bison once roamed the plains west of the Mississippi until systematic hunting drove their numbers to fewer than 50 that found refuge in Yellowstone in the early 20th century. The push to cull the herd is tied to a long-standing management plan hammered out among federal and state wildlife and agricultural agencies that sets the target population between 3,000 and 3,500 bison. The animals are prized by visitors to the park that stretches across parts of Wyoming, Montana, and Idaho. But bison that migrate each winter from Yellowstone to historic grazing grounds in Montana raise fears among ranchers about the spread of bacterial disease, brucellosis. Roughly half of Yellowstone's bisons have been exposed to disease, but ironically, they were likely exposed to the disease by cattle that once grazed in the park. The disease, which can cause miscarriages in cows, has been virtually eradicated from Montana livestock, and the state's brucellosis-free status allows ranchers to sell and ship cattle across state lines without tests, quarantines, and vaccination. If you'd like to know more about bison and what's going on in Yellowstone, you can visit the website of the Buffalo Field Campaign, buffalofieldcampaign.org, or check them out on Facebook.
Earlier this month, Texas Agriculture Commissioner Todd Staples criticized Texas school districts that have adopted meatless Monday policies in an op-ed in the Austin American-Statesman. Staples wrote, "Restricting children's meal choice to not include meat is irresponsible and has no place in our schools. This activist movement called Meatless Monday is a carefully orchestrated campaign that seeks to eliminate meat from Americans' diets 7 days a week, starting with Mondays." The Austin CBS affiliate reported that the Dripping Springs District adopted Meatless Monday to encourage healthy eating that is environmentally conscious, and that industrial meat production is resource-intensive and contributes to greenhouse gas emissions. John Crowley, head of nutrition services for the school district, told the CBS affiliate, "We're trying to think outside the box, and we serve a lot of Texas beef on our menus. We've had requests for more vegetarian options, and I thought, why don't we give it a try and see how it's received by the kids? In no way are kids going deficient in protein by not having actual meat, fish, or poultry products served on Mondays. We hope that we're meeting the parents' and kids' needs for serving things that they like and things that are healthy." Dripping Springs students are still allowed to bring their own meat lunches on Mondays. However, Texas Agriculture Commissioner Staples wrote that he sees Meatless Mondays as a way for activists to mandate their lifestyle on others. Staples has denounced Meatless Mondays in the past. In 2012, when the U.S. Department of Agriculture suggested that its employees go green by participating in Meatless Mondays, Staples declared that act treasonous. Staples has received over $100,000 in campaign contributions from beef producers over the past few years, but a spokesman from Staples' office said that the campaign contributions are unrelated to Staples' position on meat eating.
The Animal Legal Defense Fund has urged the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service to investigate possible violations of the Animal Welfare Act in the protocol approval process for maternal deprivation studies on baby monkeys at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. The Animal Welfare Act, the federal law that protects animals used for experiments in laboratories, requires each member of the approval committee to be provided notice of planned tests. Instead, as ALDF's letter notes, the university's animal care and use committees improperly delegated approval to only a few committee members rather than the full committees, which include a bioethicist opposed to these deprivation tests. The experiments entail removing newborn rhesus macaques from tranquilized or restrained mothers. The infant primates are then confined in isolation for weeks, exposed to anxiety-inducing stressors, including a live snake, and subjected to painful skin punch biopsies and stressful brain scans. The babies are killed before they reach their second birthdays. The end goal of the experiments is to evaluate the difference in dissected brains between traumatized and non-traumatized infant monkeys. A growing consensus has criticized these tests for intentionally causing needless suffering of infants in order to study what has already been conclusively proven, that traumatic injury and the psychological experience of terror changes brain matter. You can sign a petition to stop these cruel tests. Just visit ALDF.org. Stay with us. Coming up next is a conversation with Jasmine Singer and Marianne Sullivan, founders of Our Hen House. Our Hen House produces resources that you can use to find your own way to create change for animals. Using video, audio, interviews, reviews, and the written word, it provides daily updates on what you need to create change. Stick around. That's next on ACT Radio. Joining us now on Animal Concerns of Texas is Marianne Sullivan and Jasmine Singer of Our Hen House.
Thank you so much for having us. It's a pleasure to be here.
Jasmine, why don't you start off by telling our listeners how you got involved in being a vegan, and then Marianne, add your story after Jasmine finishes.
Sure, I'd love to. This is Jasmine, and I have been vegan a little over a decade. I was vegetarian long before that. I just hadn't connected the dots yet with the whole dairy and egg industry, and of course, as I quickly learned, like you probably could relate to this, when I went from vegetarian to vegan, I realized that the actual horrors that are possibly the worst, it's not great to say worse or better, are in the dairy and egg industries. But I was a AIDS awareness activist and an actress, and I was 24 at the time, and a friend of mine showed me some footage of factory farming. She was a vegan. She still is a vegan. She is Marisa Miller-Wolfson, who made the film Veducated. And we were both friends in the theater world together. And she invited me to this screening she was hosting, and she was a new vegan herself. And so I watched this documentary, and my eyes just got opened up, but I was still really afraid of wearing the word vegan. I thought, like, what could this possibly mean about my life? You know, I was afraid of the permanence of the word. But she actually took the bold step of introducing me to a group of people as a vegan. And I thought, oh, my God, now she did it. And so I decided to just sort of try it on for size. And, of course, it was the hype that was scary. It wasn't actually going vegan. It wound up being pretty easy for me to go vegan. And so I became a vegan over 10 years ago. And it's just been really wonderful to extend my activism to include and now be centered around animal rights activism. So I know that Marianne has a much different story than me. Well, I guess I'm the poster child for you can do this at any age, because even though I've been vegan for probably close to 20 years, I was in my 40s when it all started, which I guess I have just outed my age for anybody to do simple mathematics. But I had a dog for the first time in my life I had dogs growing up, but, you know, this was a dog who was mine, and I was single at the time, and we, you know, as you frequently do, I formed a really close relationship with this dog, and when you do that, you kind of, and I just loved him so much, you kind of notice that there's a lot going on, and just a casual acquaintance at the point that I was just fascinated with my dog. A casual acquaintance happened to say that he had stopped eating meat because of the way the animals were treated. And, you know, like, I knew that meat was made out of animals. I mean, I wasn't a complete idiot, but somehow it just, the whole thing of that it might be horrible had never occurred to me. And that was back in the day when it wasn't as easy to find out what was going on as it is now. So I kind of had to do some research. But really, it didn't take long. I found out about factory farming. I mean, that was already well entrenched, and the conditions were the same then as they are now, and it was just completely, everything I found out just completely horrified me. And, you know, once that happened, there was no going back. And I think that vegan is the bottom line for me, but I didn't know any other vegans at the time, so that was a little tough. And the food was pretty lousy, so I'm not a great cook, so that was a little tough. All of that has improved. But, you know, if you don't want to participate in animal cruelty and suffering, then for me, being vegan was the only solution to that. Becoming an activist, that took a little longer, and it wasn't really until I connected with some people. It was at the New York City Bar Association that I first found some compatriots in caring about animals, and it was that being able to join with other people that led me to being more active. So that was my story. It's never too late. That's what I like to name my story.
That's true. And I think many of us have stories about companion animals. My first cat helped influence me long ago.
Oh, that's so nice.
I think companion animals are the gateway drug.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about our hen house. It's really great about, you know, getting the word out and making things mainstream for the ending of exploitation of animals.
Oh, thank you. Our hen house is something that Marianne and I started 5 years ago, and we started it because I thought we should have a podcast, and Marianne thought we should have a blog, and I said, well, why not put them under the same umbrella? And that quickly expanded very, very quickly to become much more than a blog, but an online magazine. Our podcast is still going strong. We're working on production number 250 right now. We've never missed a week. We also have a TV show, which is a co-production with Brooklyn Independent Media, but is available everywhere on the internet machine at ourhenhouse.org. And we also have an ebook publishing arm. So we've, throughout the years, as things have changed, as the kind of climate, so to speak, for activists and animals and veganism has changed, and we have followed suit, it has greatly expanded the type of content that we produce, all with the goal of, as you said, ending the exploitation of animals. So we try to be indefatigably positive whenever we can. Even though there's so much horror going on, there's a lot that we could be hopeful about. There's a lot of great change makers out there, and we are honored and privileged to be able to interview so many of them and to really shed light on the myriad ways people are getting involved with change making. And it blows our mind, truly. Everyone from academics to artists to lawyers like Marianne to writers to students to parents, there really is no limit for how many ways we can use our own voice to speak up for animals. So that's kind of the nutshell of what our hen house is. We are a nonprofit, and we are a small and committed group of folks who like to believe that we're all part of a community. Our hen house is hopefully part of that community for anyone who cares about animals, whether it be your cat or your dog, or whether it be farmed animal advocacy. There's a place for everyone with our hen house.
You know, one of the things you mentioned was being positive. And I think I saw you both speak at the Animal Law Conference a few years ago, and I think it was in Portland at that time. But how do you all contend with, you know, the negativity in the movement? How do you stay positive despite really all the difficulties that you find?
Fear. Well, you know, when we started this, and as Jasmine said, it started very casually, it really was just to try to help our own activism, because we got caught up in all that negativity too, and it's hard not to. I mean, you know, once you see this horror, you just want to stop it, and you can get angry at people who are still participating in it, and that's not going to do any good. And
no.
it's not even being compassionate. I mean, it doesn't work, and it kind of violates your own principles. And you have to find a way to be compassionate. And really, the only way to be compassionate, I think, is to find some way to do this in a positive way, and some way to recognize that this is a wonderful thing to discover, the world of animals. And even though there is a lot bad going on in the world, you can help so many people come to a better place in their life. And really, we want to be that family. And, you know, family may be dysfunctional at times, and we are dysfunctional at times, but family is support. And as I said before, when I first became vegan, I didn't know any other vegans, and that made it really hard. And even though veganism is so much more popular now, and animal awareness is growing, and people are on in one place or the other on that route to really changing their lives in a way that is more animal positive, a lot of people are very alone with this. I mean, we've had letters recently from someone in Niue Island, which is actually a country that I had never heard of in the Pacific, who is the only vegan she knows. At this, in the same week, we had somebody from rural Saskatchewan write to us, and she's the only vegan that she knows. And whether you have a lot of vegans in your life or a lot of animal passionate people in your life or just a few, you need a family, and we want to be that. And when you want to be somebody's family, you don't want to be negative all the time. It doesn't motivate anybody, and it's just not a good way to live.
And it perpetuates the stereotype of the angry, intrusive vegan that most of us want to move away from.
Yeah, I agree with that. The kindest people I know, the warmest, most empathic, wonderful people happen to be vegan. And I don't want people to see me as that, you know, angry vegan. Someone actually bought me a button once, like a, you know, the kind of button you put in your bag, and it said angry vegan, and I was like, not sure what to do with this, but thank you. So that being said, I actually have come to feel in the last couple of years that there's actually nothing really wrong with anger. It's just about the way we
express it.
Right, exactly, because I'm angry. If I wasn't angry, I would be complacent or dead. Really. So I agree with that. It's how you express it. So we are definitely not shy about our opinions. We just try to find opportunities rather than throwing up our hands in defeat.
I have a T-shirt hanging in my closet, which I haven't worn very often. I just like the message on it. It struck me as funny. It says, animals die to keep your fat ass alive.
Right.
Yeah. That's the kind of thing I would also probably like frame in my bedroom but not wear out.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I was going to follow up on the family theme because a lot of people, their own family isn't very supportive of them switching their lifestyle because a lot of family events are all centered on food, as everybody knows. And once you announce to your own family that, you know, you're no longer going to eat grandma's delicious brisket or whatever it is, a lot of people take it as a personal insult. So a lot of times it is important to have a support network outside your traditional family, and having a vegan family would really help in times like that, especially when people are thinking about what am I going to do for the holidays when I have to interact with my real family. It's always a stressful time for people that are newly transitioning to vegetarianism or veganism.
Yeah. I agree with that, and we have both worlds here because this is Jasmine speaking, and my family is vegan by and large, and Marianne's is not. So we deal with both sides of that, and I think that that's a really interesting discussion that a lot of us should be having about what where do we draw the line, how do we communicate, and when do we just kind of move on past the idea that we're going to change our family and think, well, all of this effort, and of course it's emotional effort because it's our family and we're very emotionally tied to them for inexplicable reasons sometimes, all of this effort that we have can be put into spending 15 minutes leafleting and probably changing two people's hearts and minds in that 15 minutes.
Yeah.
So it's a great question. It's something we all struggle with, and at least there's some kind of unity in the knowledge that we are all struggling with that same thing.
You know, and having a support group is much easier today than it used to be. With the internet, there are vegan chat groups and bulletin boards that you can have virtual friends that are vegans that, you know, this was impossible some years ago.
I totally agree. This is Marianne. And, you know, as I said, that's kind of where I was. And that virtual support group and finding some people in your local community, it just gets easier every day because the more... As it becomes easier, it becomes even easier because there are more and more people, and even with who are catching on and who are going vegan or taking steps toward veganism or just being more friendly toward it. I think even within families, though not everybody is this lucky, but you know, there aren't that many fails. Every article you read about Thanksgiving now talks about dealing with the vegan. Almost every family has one. It's just become a little bit less bizarre that you're vegan. And your family is just a little, you know, a little more likely to say, oh, okay.
And not just think, oh, well, you can pick the giblets out of the gravy if you want it or whatever. Yeah. No, in fact, I just got an email today from one of my colleagues here at work, and she recently went vegan, and she wanted to get together and go out for lunch at one of our restaurants here in El Paso, Texas, that serves vegan options. And now, I mean, that would have been hard, you know, 10 years ago to find a restaurant to go to, but now we have a lot of different choices. And she was saying that she just feels so great now that she's vegan. She wonders why it took her so long to make the move. And it's a question that a lot of us ask ourselves after we finally take this step.
I think every one of us does. It just seems inexplicable. It's hard to remember why it seemed hard and why I didn't do it so much earlier.
Yeah.
You know, I want to talk about both of you's perspective and watching you on the TV show and in the podcast. And you both really seem to have a lot of fun. And I definitely admire that about your style. And I'm curious, too, you know, about your guests. You know, not often do we have people on the show who are interviewing people all the time. And I think we all here at ACT Radio enjoy the show because we get to read about people's experiences and their books and learn from them. And I'm curious about, you know, some of your experiences with your guests and, you know, most inspiring and people that have really influenced you?
Well, that's a great question. I really appreciate that. This is Jasmine speaking. Yeah, our TV show is relatively new. It just started this year. And as I mentioned, our podcast has been going for years. But we've interviewed hundreds and hundreds of people who are changing the world for animals. And I find inspiration in surprising places. And I also feel like there are people who I'm about to interview that I'm so excited about. And then I guess, occasionally disappointed by. So the ones who inspire me, you know, I don't even remember everyone who's been on our podcast. I often have to go into the little search engine on our henhouse.org and type in a name to see if we've interviewed them. But there are a few people who pop out. I will say that just yesterday, we interviewed someone for our podcast who we're going to put on episode 250, which airs in mid-October at our henhouse.org. And I found such inspiration from her, and it was Sharon Gannon, who is the founder of Jiva Mukti Yoga, and she has a new cookbook out, so we thought it was timely to have her on, but the interview was about so much more than her cookbook. It was just about the fact that she's been a pioneer for animal rights since the early 1980s. And she's, you know, in her 60s, as is Marianne, so I always like to look up to people who are older. I'm 35. In October, actually. And I always like to look up to people who are older who've been doing this for so long to see what they have learned and glean from it. And Sharon was just, like, unapologetic and passionate, but also really, really communicative. And so I'm excited about that airing. A few other people who just spring to mind when you said that, Jenny Brown from Woodstock Farm Animal Sanctuary. Oh, yeah. She has been on both our podcast and our TV show, and both times I actually just got a little verklempt just thinking about it. I mean, the sanctuary movement is such an integral part of the animal rights movement, and the fearless leaders behind it are not only dealing with the cuteness that we see on Facebook, but they're dealing with death on a day-to-day basis. And there's only a few of them. I mean, there's only like a few dozen people running these sanctuaries, and to think that they are out there creating these new ways of thinking and being, and it moves me so much. Jenny is such a hero to me. And then Timothy Patcherat, who wrote the book Every 12 Seconds, Industrialized Slaughter at the Politics of Sight. He was on our podcast, and I think what he did by going undercover in a slaughterhouse and just the way it changed him, not only the way it changed him, but the way his then 9-year-old daughter changed him, because she was the one who went vegan first, not Timothy. That gives me hope for our youth. And I mentioned sanctuary leaders, of course. Susie Costin is also a great hero to us. So these are some of the interviews that for me have really, really moved me.
Yeah, this is Marianne. One interview, those all I totally agree with. And I'm not going to name names, but I would say if there are any that have been disappointing, it's usually people who do a little too much PR and you just get their talking points. And they're not gearing it to your audience. And I think that's a lesson for us all to keep in mind. But one of my favorite TV interviews I had just brought to mind how much I love my students. You know, I teach animal law at a couple of law schools, and it's the people coming up who just unbelievably amaze me. And they're so much smarter than us. And they're so much better, and they're so much more passionate. It just gives me so much hope. And the person who sprang to mind a TV interview we did was with a student at Brooklyn Law School, David Kropkin, who's running this organization to protect the geese of New York City. And the passion of these young people is just so exciting to see. And they're not the people who have been doing this for years and years necessarily. They're not necessarily the people who are running organizations, though David is already. I love interviewing young people. I love interviewing old people.
Sounds like a perfect mix then.
I don't want any middle-aged people on our show.
Yeah, exactly.
Actually, can I just add one thing? I've never said this before. Never. Not on our podcast. Never. I've only said this internally. But I just want to tell you the people who make up the staff at our hen house are 20, 35, 51, and 64, which I think is really cool. Like, we're all 14 or 15 years apart. We're looking for somebody who's 75 or older, so I don't have to be the oldest one. And we're looking for 5 or younger as well.
Well, I'll join your staff in about 10 years then.
Okay.
Maybe you can tell us real quick about any future projects that you have going on.
Well, we are just about to go into season 2 of the TV show. They're building us a new set right now, probably as we speak. And so that's exciting. I hear they're being inspired by Pee Wee's Playhouse.
Oh, no.
That's scary.
Awesome.
As a child of the 80s, I am so excited about. We have an ebook publishing arm called Hen Press. And last year, it was early this year, we had a really beautiful ebook by Sangu Iyer, just a short ebook called The Lines We Draw, and people could look that up wherever ebooks are sold. Yeah, this is Mary, I'm just inserting here. Please do look it up. It is I am so proud that we published that ebook. It is beautiful, and I encourage everybody to download a copy, The Lines We Draw. And we have another author, Anat Pick, writing our next ebook, which will come out early next year. So that's thrilling. I just this morning queued up on our online magazine a really incredible and harrowing and beautiful and moving and depressing and hopeful photo essay by a really wonderful photographer who went into the live markets in New York City. But he presents it in a way that is not going to make you want to split your wrists, but it's going to make you want to really take action. It kind of made me want to split my wrist. Okay, well, Mary.
Where can our listeners go to learn more about your show?
Ourhenhouse.org is the easiest place. You can find our podcast on iTunes and Stitcher as well. And we are having a lot of fun, as you mentioned. And thank you for noticing that over at ourhenhouse.org. So I hope people join the flock.
We've been talking with Jasmine Singer and Marianne Sullivan of Our Hen House. Thank you both so much for being with
us. Thank you very much for doing what you do.
Earlier in the show, you may have heard Greg mention Meatless Mondays. Well, if you're curious about them, you might want to try out the Meatless Monday special at Eloise, the restaurant on Shadow Mountain. They have a 20% discount on all vegetarian and vegan items on Monday nights.
And also, the Vegetarian Society of El Paso will have a vegan drinks meetup tomorrow, Monday, at Eloise. Join us. October is International Vegetarian Awareness Month. A variety of vegan options is now available at many El Paso restaurants, and it's a good time to explore some of the tasty plant-based options which you can find at your local supermarket. If you'd like to learn more about a plant-based diet, visit the Vegetarian Society of El Paso's website, vsep.org.
And if you'd like to listen to some of the past shows of ACK Radio, you can find them at ktep.org. Just click on the listen button.
Until next time, I'm Greg Lawson.
I'm Tom Linney.
And I'm Liz Walsh. For the animals, the earth, and a healthier humanity, thanks for listening to Animal Concerns of Texas.